Lately, I've been using a new product that I really like. It's called Superbeads. It's based on Nobel Prize winning research and the nitric oxide principle. Nitrates are converted to nitric oxide in the body, which is the secret to Superbeads' activity. Call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeads.com. That's 800-738-2198, intelligentbeads.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla Budin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist, is with us today to answer your questions. You can send us questions via radioprogram@AOL.com. And I'll remind you that Layla and I work together, seeing patients at the Hoffman Center. So if you see me, you will, by default, see Layla to work on your diet. But also, if you're working with a vitamin supplement program or a nutritional issue, you can see Layla via an alternative pathway at the Hoffman Center. You can see her independently. If you like your doctor and you want to keep your doctor, you can see Layla independently. So call the Hoffman Center for information or go to drhoffman.com to find out about that option. And you're getting patients from all over the country now, right?
Yes. I just had another brand new patient from Georgia the other day.
Oh, cool.
I've got all kinds of somebody with cancer and osteoporosis.
We had a patient from Georgia yesterday, but that Georgia, Russia.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Nice man.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the first question is, hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Can you briefly address the bioavailability of oral vitamin D3 supplementation versus vitamin D obtained from natural sunlight? Thank you for tremendously helpful service to society, Tracy. And thank you, Tracy, for those kind comments.
That's a topic for a whole podcast. We could talk an entire podcast about that.
Well, let's yeah. I know it's an important subject. Let's cover it briefly, though. So,
sure.
You know, and you can flesh this out because this is something you know very well. Vitamin D can be obtained in two basic ways by the human body.
Mm-hmm.
And one way is through sunlight. And it is actually believed that Caucasians evolved to have light skin precisely for that reason.
Yes,
because
natural selection. Yep.
Because as we know, humans evolved in equatorial regions. So the earliest fossil remains are found, you know, like 2 million years old in the old Duvet Gorge in Kenya. And our earliest ancestors were probably dark-skinned, although we don't have any selfies. We don't have any actual evidence of that. The fossil evidence doesn't show skin color, but it's very likely that our ancestors were dark-skinned, you know, like the peoples of Africa. But in the process of evolution, and only fairly recently, humans migrated to northern climes, you know, maybe, you know, a few hundred thousand years ago, and thereby lost their skin pigment precisely because melanin, which is this dark stuff, it protects the skin from burns, but it also prevents absorption of vitamin D. You don't really absorb vitamin D. The vitamin D hits certain receptors in your skin, and it converts the UV light, and then the vitamin D gets synthesized in your skin.
Yes, and you know what? We need 7-dehydrocholesterol in our skin. Cholesterol has a benefit to synthesize the UVB rays to produce vitamin D. Now, by age 65 or so, the 7-dehydrocholesterol in our skin begins to diminish.
Right. And
that's
also, I think
the
activity of the receptors probably diminishes too, just like, I don't know, your skin just tends to get devitalized as you get older.
Yeah.
So the vitamin D factories in your skin are not as efficient as you get older.
Right.
So the consequence of this is that you take a darker skinned individual, especially, and you put them in Toronto, and they are very likely to be vitamin D deficient because they're only going to be able to make vitamin D during a few months of the year. And if their skin is darker, they're going to need longer sun exposure than a light skinned Caucasian. And, you know, they actually have tables calculating, you know, how much it takes. But a lifeguard working, you know, on the beach can make as much as 10 or 20,000 international units of vitamin D per day just from sunlight exposure.
Yeah. Yep.
Now,
until he starts to tan quite deeply.
Oh, which somewhat, protects from more
exposure. So the darker skin you are, the longer time it takes.
Right. So this
and
is like a.
The fairer
like
skin
a,
you are, you could basically develop, you know, all the vitamin D you need in about 20 minutes or so.
Exactly. Short exposure, you know, especially during critical months. However, if you live at a latitude north of about where we are, which is New York, there's going to be a whole lot of months, probably from October, maybe
to
through
April
where you can lie naked on, you know, on the roof of your building for 8 hours, and you won't make one iota of vitamin D. Nobody will care anymore because people are walking around naked in Times Square. So it'll be
that's right.
Don't worry about it. You can do it, but it won't do you any good. You won't get arrested. It'll be perfectly fine. But every voyeur in New York will be happy. So, okay. That aside, so what about oral vitamin D? Well, oral vitamin D is well-absorbed, but it's also subject to certain blockades. There are several ways that oral vitamin D can't get to you in terms of its bioavailability. One is if you've got really crappy digestion. If you have, say, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, I notice these people don't absorb very well. Number two, it appears that vitamin D, in inflammation, you may need more vitamin D to quench inflammation. Your vitamin D levels may require higher amounts of vitamin D to quench your inflammation. That seems to be the case. I've noticed this over the years, and now new studies are suggesting that. Number three, there's what's called the vitamin D receptor, and people have different mutations of the vitamin D receptor. And I just saw an article that's looked at mutations of the vitamin D receptor in relationship to multiple sclerosis. And so they looked at populations probably getting about the same amount of sunlight, same amount of oral vitamin D, but based on their vitamin D receptor, you know, if they had a receptor that was avid for vitamin D or a receptor that was very resistant to vitamin D, they had a higher or lower risk of multiple sclerosis, which we know probably is dependent on vitamin D levels. Very low levels predispose to MS and higher levels protect. So that was interesting. Yeah. So number four, there's another thing, which it appears that African Americans have a type of carrier protein for vitamin D, which makes it appear that their vitamin D is lower when it's really not. That's at least the theory. So that we see abysmally low levels of vitamin D in individuals of African American heritage, dark skin. But
so they would have a different reference range.
They might have
a lab value.
They don't know yet. They're just speculating. Is that they just handle vitamin D differently than Caucasians or other races. This is all in flux. I mean, we're looking for the final answer, but, you know, nutrition research is underway. And the fifth thing that really affects vitamin D is if you're obese. Because if you're obese, it's the vitamin D, being a fat-soluble nutrient, gets stored in your fat, and it's less available in the bloodstream.
Right.
And therefore, it may take more vitamin D to replenish someone who is overweight than someone who is rail thin. So there's a lot of things going on. So,
and, you know, people who are taking certain medications can also cause vitamin C deficiency, such as anticonvulsants.
Yes, that too. Thank you. That's a sixth reason. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also, glucocorticoids.
Yep, steroids.
Anti-rejection medication.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, can also cause deficiency, as well as antiretroviral medication in HIV patients and things. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are lots of causes for deficiency.
Okay.
And what you said earlier about the gastrointestinal diseases, as well as things like cystic fibrosis, celiac disease, gastric bypass surgery, which they're really trying to make mainstream now.
Yes, they want to make it
yet
like
another,
that's the solution to obesity and diabetes. It's a fix. Yeah,
oh,
a quick fix.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's going to cause all kinds of deficiency.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to share a study with you. which is germane to this. I looked this up. Sunlight exposure or vitamin D supplementation for vitamin D deficient non-Western immigrants. Let me repeat that. You know, they're basically asking the question, which is better, sunlight exposure or vitamin D supplementation for vitamin D deficient non-Western immigrants? Well, so the non-Western immigrants generally are going to be darker skinned. Okay. I don't think they segregated between, you know, people from the Middle East versus people from Africa. But, you know, you can bet these individuals are probably darker skinned, maybe some Asians. I don't know. But so what they say is, vitamin D deficiency is very common in non-Western immigrants. Well, and one of the reasons for vitamin D deficiency to be very common in non-Western immigrants is that they come from, you know, countries where maybe there's strict laws about, you know, covering the body, the women wear burqas. Yeah. And, you know, you can, I mean, in Saudi Arabia, which is like the hottest, you know, most sun-baked country in the world, there's a lot of vitamin D deficiency because, A, they don't let women to go out. They have to stay home. And, B, they have to wear burqas, you know, or veils, and they cover their body. So, and same thing, you know, this is not just a Muslim thing. We see this in Orthodox Jews, too, because there's a lot of, there's modesty, you know, the women are not rocking their bodies in bikinis, you know. So, anyway, so in this randomized clinical trial, vitamin D, 800 international units per day, was compared with advised sunlight exposure. Now, what do you think of vitamin D, 800 international units per day?
Oh, boy, they're not going to, that's not going to do much.
Pretty timid. Okay, well, you're right, it didn't.
And how long were they in the sunlight? How long were they allowed to be in the sunlight?
Whatever, advised sunlight exposure, probably like, you know, a few minutes.
That's not going to help either.
Yeah,
okay.
Anyway.
You have to be naked at noon, and if you're dark-skinned, you have to be naked at noon for 2 hours.
Right, but, you know, the dermatologist will tell you never to do that and always use sunscreen, and then you'll never get vitamin D. Then, you know, if you listen to dermatologists, they're more concerned about your risk of cancer than your risk of, you know, all the diseases that might occur in the setting of vitamin D deficiency. So, you know, they're, you know, they're kind of penny-wise, pound-foolish when it comes to that. All right. So in this trial, what they found was that, first of all, the baseline serum vitamin D was 22.5, but that's the nanomoles per liter. So divide that by 2.5. It probably was about, about 8.
Yeah. That's an emergency.
Yeah. 8 by our scale. So, you know, these are people who have no vitamin D. After 6 months, the vitamin D had increased to 53 with 800 IUs per day. That's still too low. 53 divided by 2.5 is what? It's about 18.
It's going to be double the 8, isn't it? Yeah,
20.
Okay.
Some 20. Yeah. It's going to be 20, which is barely scraping the bottom. It's still deficient.
Yeah.
I mean, 20 is below 20 is a definite deficient. So it wasn't any longer deficient. And with advised sunlight exposure, it only went up to 29. So what they're saying is that the supplement, even the lousy supplementation, worked better than the sunlight exposure. So the conclusion, really, that I think you can draw is, I think you have to draw this conclusion, is that oral vitamin D supplementation is more efficient than sunlight exposure, especially in older individuals or individuals who have darker skin. I mean, in this case, I mean, this may be atypical. This may not represent the experience of our average listener who may have lighter skin, because they're non-Western immigrants. But sunlight is fine, and we advise sunlight. And we even advise judicious tanning if you do it the right way, short periods of time. But, you know, you always run the risk of skin cancer and solar damage when you get exposed to lots of sun. And, you know,
you don't want lots. You just want just enough.
Right, and you know, the other thing I'll point out is we've done a nice podcast on sun protective nutrients, and there are lots of them. That you know, many of the things that I've taken, and I get a lot of sun exposure, and I rarely put on sunscreen. And knock wood, no skin cancer yet. You know, I haven't been.
And you know what? That sunscreen, if the SPF is as little as 8, you're not going to make vitamin D from sunlight.
Exactly. As little as 8. That's the
point. And nobody's walking around with 8 anymore. They're walking around with 50.
50, which is a joke. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I think, you know, we didn't do the whole podcast on this, but it's an important subject. And I think we covered it pretty well. Okay, so we have time for another question. I believe you have another question.
Yes, I've got one here from Annette.
Yeah, actually, I have another one, too, but you can go. Yeah.
Okay. Annette says, hello. I've been listening to your show for years. I've learned so much. Thank you. The reason for my email is that I have a question regarding saw palmetto. You advertised your saw palmetto pygium nettle root for men with prostate and urinary problems, but I would like to know if it's safe for me to take on a daily basis to hopefully regrow my hair without any adverse reaction since I'm a 25-year-old female.
Right.
And she says, I've suffered horrible hair loss for the last 15 years, have lost more than 50% of my hair since then.
Right. So the answer is it might help, and it's not a bad thing to use. However, it only works on one mechanism of hair loss, and there are probably several. And the mechanism of hair loss that is more important in men than in women is androgen-related hair loss. That's why men get, you know, dramatically bald, and women just maybe get
male pattern baldness.
They'll get a little recession at the temples, maybe a little sparse patch in the middle, but rarely do women get the type of baldness that men do. And so, by the way, I think that saw palmetto is somewhat helpful for preventing baldness, but it's not nearly as helpful as Propecia, which is a drug that's used to block bad testosterone, so-called bad testosterone that produces baldness. That drug is not a drug that's suitable for someone of reproductive age. So this is a young woman, she cannot take it. Women who are post-menopausal, who are at no risk of having children, can take that medication. And it's only somewhat effective. There's so many mechanisms for hair loss: autoimmunity, heredity, nutritional deficiency.
I question nutritional deficiency here. She says she has no medical problems. She says all of her blood tests are great.
Fine.
But she eats about 85% vegetables, low sugar.
Okay.
And I wonder if she's getting enough protein. I wonder what her ferritin is.
Yeah, those are all things. You know, there are other factors involved. And sometimes it's actually difficult to pinpoint the cause of hair loss.
And if she has low thyroid, because those tests can come
that
back,
too.
In the normal range, but they're not really normal.
That too. And yeah, so we would look at a multiplicity of factors. And yeah, it wouldn't hurt to take the saw palmetto. So let me actually answer. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say she should also take things like biotin, biosil, hishou wu is another one. Mm-hmm. Chinese herbs that can be very vital for hair regrowth.
Literally translated means Mr. Wu has dark hair.
Wow.
But it's actually it's not a bad thing to take in general. A lot of Chinese take it not just for hair, but for as a tonic, sort of a tonic herb to help energize them, because dark hair is a sign of vitality, and these herbs don't just work to make hair grow; they also work to generally vitalize you. So that's an herb that we carry at drhoffman.com. And it's safe because we're very concerned about herbs that are coming from China, but this made by a company is very reputable, and they really screen very carefully for harmful ingredients. All right, there's one more question, which I'll introduce. It's from Dwayne. Hi, Dr. Robin. Can you address the supplementation of GH3, also known as Gerovital? The positive and negatives using this supplement. I'm sure that over the years you've encountered the supplement and had questions yourself about it. Thank you, Dwayne. Okay, well, I know about Gerovital because Gerovital is really kind of an old-style 20th century thing. It's so 1980s.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's kind of like a Duran-Duran era supplement. It's, disco era. And what it is, it's actually procaine hydrochloride. Procaine is local anesthetic, and
Novocaine.
And its origin is from a very strange time in history in a kind of crazy country, which is Romania under Nicolae Ceausescu, who was a crazy dictator who supposedly wishing to obtain, quote, immortality, funded the establishment of a research organization in Romania headed by his favorite doctor, who was Ana Aslan. Now, I have about as much faith in, Nicolae Ceausescu and his favorite doctor as I do in, let's take an example in the news. It's in the stock market.
because... It's time to buy,
Right.
It's
right.
a sale.
No, I know. Wait,
people have to stop panicking and start buying.
Right.
Anyway, go on.
I think that for the past few days, I think people have realized that. Okay, so anyway, this also, I think, was a way to obtain a lot of foreign currency for a country that was just in horrible, horrible shape under communism. Mm-hmm. And so this was promoted highly from the 1950s until the 80s. And there was actually a Romanian clinic called the Parhan Institute. It became a mecca for celebrities seeking treatment and an upscale tourist attraction. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Public figures such as Nikita Khrushchev, Konrad Adenauer, and Ibn Saud, who was, I don't know, he was like president of something, Egypt, were listed among the multitude said to have taken the drug. That, to me, does not highly recommend the drug. I think there may be some slight benefits to taking a local anesthetic injected in terms of maybe mood or maybe slowing the progression of Alzheimer's. It's thought to be an MAO inhibitor, which can protect the brain. But I got to say, there is very, very little evidence that GH3 does it. And I was all over that in the 1980s because mm-hmm. that's when I started private practice. And people wanted GH3. And I, you know, said, well, I don't know. I'd investigate. I said, you know, I'm not really going to advise that you take GH3. You want to get GH3, go ahead and get it. But I'm not going to give it to you. And, you know, it's also been subject to a lot of counterfeits. You know, then there's oral GH3, which is ridiculous because, you know, procaine doesn't work orally. And I think it's just one of those fringy things. That,
unless you're getting it injected to have a tooth pulled.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's when it works orally.
Exactly. But then, you know, I think they don't even use that. They use xylocaine, you know, which is different cane.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to get behind it. And, you know, I think it's a hallmark of kind of over-the-top promotion that is unfortunately one aspect of the field of complementary alternative medicine that, we try to kind of call it as we see it, and there's some things that are just too far over the bleeding edge of innovation.
Yeah.
So that just about wraps up today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. And remind you also that, you know, we talk about products, we talk about various supplements, except for GH3. They're all available via drhoffman.com. We have a very fine selection of supplements at our Hoffman Center dispensary, and they're reasonably priced. And we urge you to help to support our continued distribution of these podcasts by purchasing some of your quality supplements from drhoffman.com. Thanks very much for joining us. And thank you, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.